This interview is brought to you by Transformational Mortgage Solutions. You can check out the full episode at lickinonlending.com.
Alice, always fun to see you at these conferences. Are you going to be able to make it this year to the annual conference? Hopefully so.
You know, I'm still checking on that right now with my schedule.
I hope you can stay tuned on that. We definitely want to see you out there. So, Alice Alvey, what do you have as far as a report today on what's going on in the legislative update?
I think the main legislative update item I wanted to bring to everyone's attention, I feel like a little bit of water under the bridge at this point, because the comment period for the HUD disparate impact rule did close last week, but we just got MBA's response to this proposal, and it really did pull together some puzzle pieces that I thought were really helpful and I want to share with our list. So for those of you who've been in this industry for a really long time, you know that our challenge has always been that for fair lending, the way it's been treated is if just through your data, a regulator could look back. So in this case, it would be the CFPB who oversees this rule. In the old days, it was HUD. And if they could look back at your and see that particular minority were disparately impacted by any policy that you had, then you could potentially have a problem. And it wouldn't have to be that you actually had a policy in writing. It just could be the way the data rolled out. As lenders, we've always had to constantly look at our data to ensure that something we had wasn't inadvertently causing disparate impact. So that's essentially how the 2013 rule was still written, that an auditor could look at data and kind of have 2020 vision looking backwards at your lending pattern. So there was a change with the Supreme Court that came out, and 2015, when the Supreme Court came on the decision that we refer to as the Inclusive Communities project, because it was Department of Housing and Urban Community Affairs out of Texas versus Inclusive Communities Project. And under this, Supreme Court recognized that there really does have intention. There has to be more than just data. There has to be more put on plaintiffs to prove that the lender intentionally tried to create a disparate impact to a particular group and not just a reverse look back at data and try and kind of back into was there something that happened. So what's been going back and forth is whether or not HUD in this new proposed rule is going to just revert back to their old ways, revert back to 2013, and ignore the recent Supreme Court ruling. HUD is this as a result of President Biden issuing a memorandum that HUD needed to go back and take a look at this. So you've heard me talk about this on our show a couple of times because HUD has been trying to align a court decision. Then President Biden came out with the order to say, take a look at this, ordering the department to take all steps necessary to examine the effects of the 2020 rule, including amending that 2013 rule. And so it's really now a conflict. In the last round of this, HUD is saying they received 45,000 comments. And so here we are again with entire industry saying this is not reasonable to go all the way back to the 2013 rule. We need to keep in mind the Supreme Court decision and need to make sure there's more structure around what the plaintiff needs to present in a fair lending case. So more to come on this. The MBA got together with the Consumer Bankers Association, the Independent Community Bankers, and the American Bankers Association, as well as the MBA, all got together on this comment for them to make sure that we don't go back in how we're interpreting this and ignore the Supreme Court ruling. So we'll see what happens. This does have a big impact on all of us as lenders, and we want to make sure we aren't going to get caught for things that we didn't intend to have happen or get cited for things we didn't intend to have happen. Maybe it's a good call for Mitch kind of future if this gets any further along the path. That's my summary for lenders today. We're still in flux over the HUD proposed rule for fair lending and more to follow. And then, Dave, I think you wanted to talk about the Bitcoin announcement.
This Bitcoin news that they featured, UWM's announcement that they're going to accept them. CNBC, we just played that clip. I would like to pay it, but I don't have permission to do that from CNBC, so I don't want to violate any copywriting laws. But Google that, folks. It's a real interesting article and it raised some real good questions. And Alice, you were first to ask one of the pertinent questions. Is it traded? Is it turned to cash if you make a payment in Bitcoin? Is it automatically create a taxable event? And does it get converted, or do they hold on to it as a Bitcoin? And if that's transferred, what are the implications? I'd love your thoughts on it. We'll get Alan in on it in a minute.
Well, I don't have answers. I think I had a lot of questions came to mind. Right. Yeah, from what I recall in the clip, the reporter had a few of them too and said, and we reached out to the company and have not heard back, at least at the time of that recording, and that was a couple of days ago. So I think my biggest question was, if I'm any company and I'm accepting the bit, how am I showing that on books, right? And am I now using that as an asset that's going to potentially continually appreciate on my book, right? If I'm a consumer, do I really want to give that away like that to my bank? Why wouldn't I cash it in essentially giving an appreciable asset to my lender? I'm confused. Yeah.
But this isn't something new to you, because you've also had several customers you were talking about on the pre-show, and you actually have a bit of a policy and a procedure and some of this. Any insights that you can share with us?
Yeah, I think we're just following the guidelines, right? So we've got Fannie and Freddie as far as acknowledging that it's out there, but you still have to liquidate it if you want to use it as funds to close. And so when we've had customers who were taking this approach, you know, we've got to actually try and coach them into, all right, how do you document that it's actually yours? Because the whole point behind Bitcoin is no one knows whose it is. But when we get it, we need it as source of funds to close. Okay, we actually have to document that who owned it. So we do have to walk customers through how to dig that out of their account statements. And there is a way that it be done. And so that's what we were chatting about. So our lender's going to go through that as part of the process to accept. We'll see. They're going to be first in, and who knows if they'll share with us how they're actually doing it.
Fascinating. We'll try to get a hold of Matt at UWM. He's a friend, someone we know real well. So it'll be interesting. Also, I want to say this. When I was at the Lenders One conference back in Orlando a couple of weeks ago, I ran into Mary Perillo, who is client relations manager with Sandler Law Group. And they also have a company that's called Assurity Technologies, and they have a risk exec product out there, and it measures based on your HMDA. Chris Gray was the guy that's the vice president of business development there, was at the conference, and in his booth, he was literally, a new company would come in, would bring up their HMDA data, download it all right there in the booth, live data, and then start going in and analyzing it, and very interesting. So they're not an advertiser, but I'm going to give a plug out to Mary and Chris, who we did get some time with them last week on a phone call. And we're going to do a demonstration of their product to better understand that. But I'm sure there's other companies out there that do that. But that one, the way they went about it was really raising some eyebrows and impressing some people there at the Lenders One conference where we all were together in Orlando a few weeks ago. So very interesting stuff, Alice. The HMDA amount of data that sits there, it just seems like one huge liability. And you've got to have the tools to go in and analyze it to see what is the things that are maybe not so glaring, but that are there that your data reviews that reveals that you don't know about. So I know you guys got that covered, Alice, because I know you know that real well.
We do, but you're right. There are a couple of companies out there, and it's something we all have to have once you get to a certain size.
Yep, very much. Alice, thank you so much for being with us this week. This has been Alice Alvey. We've had on here CMB Vice President of Education Training at Union Home Mortgage. Appreciate Bill and Al the lending us, Alice. They do value her, and we value her, and I know you listeners value her, so glad that they let her come on the podcast and continue to do so. Now, over 12 years on the podcast. So excited. Next week, we're going to have another good friend on, Tony Kaiko of Infinity 5. Tony does a brilliant job of finding the right talent for your firm. We're talking about, should you be developing yourself, listeners, as you want to expand your career? Be sure to check out next week's podcast. Tune in for it, because the interview with Tony Kaiko is awesome. You're going to love it. Special thank you to our sponsors, Finastra, CMLA, the Lenders One, Incelerate, Mobility MMI, Modex, the MBA, Knowledge Group, and Mortgage Collaborative. And soon coming in is SnapDocs. Very excited about all this. Have a great week, everybody. Look forward to having you back here next week.
You've been listening to Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Lickin of Transformational Mortgage Solutions. Join us next week, and thanks for listening.